Hello, and welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. First the news, and late in the show, we'll bring you a feature interview with Vladimir Osakovsky, chief economist for Russia and CIS at the Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
You said the Russian-led separatists?
Yes.
Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko laid a wreath at a memorial to fallen Georgian freedom fighters in Heroes Square in Tbilisi.
На місці бывшей Украины, опираясь на исторические предпосылки, учредить государство Малороссия.
At the beginning of the week, Ukraine's President Poroshenko paid an official visit to Georgia, which, despite political changes in recent years, has remained a friend and ally of Ukraine. During the visit, the leaders of the two countries signed a declaration on mutual support of sovereignty and territorial integrity.
On July 18th, Poroshenko and Georgia's president, Georgi Margvelashvili, agreed to work together to help their former Soviet countries prepare for eventual NATO and European Union membership.
And in Donetsk, separatists proclaimed that Ukraine is dead and is to be replaced by a little Russia. On the 18th of July, the leader of the Russian-backed forces occupying part of Donetsk Oblast, Oleksandr Sakharchenko, made headlines by proclaiming a new state of Malorossiya, or pejoratively Little Russia in English, which he claimed will, quote, succeed Ukraine, unquote. Previously, the separatists had called themselves either the so-called People's Republic of Donetsk, and before that as, quote, Novorossiya, unquote. Sakharchenko claimed that Ukraine has failed as a state and that representatives from various regions of Ukraine had endorsed the idea of creating an alternative Malorossian state on the territory of present-day Ukraine.
На місці бывшей Украины, опираясь на исторические предпосылки, учредить государство Малороссия.
It was unclear what Sakharchenko's declaration represented: bluff, bluster, or a testing of the waters by the Kremlin in light of the long-stalled Minsk tripartite consultations and attempts by France and the US to revamp them. The Minsk Accords uphold the independence and territorial integrity of Ukraine, and the Donbas separatist leaders' move challenges the principles on which they are based. Germany, France, the USA and the EU all condemned Sakharchenko's proclamation and called on Russia to bring its proxy into line. While stopping short of criticism, the Kremlin depicted the proclamation of a Malorossian state as Sakharchenko's personal initiative. Meanwhile, the other self-proclaimed separatist entity in the Donbas, the so-called Luhansk People's Republic, has distanced itself from the declaration. Speaking at a press conference in Tbilisi, President Poroshenko commented that, quote, Sakharchenko is not a political figure but a puppet transmitting the Kremlin's messages, unquote. He expressed certainty that Ukraine would in time restore its control over the Donbas. And this week also saw a visit to Kyiv of President Lukashenko of Belarus. In fact, on Thursday and Friday, President of Belarus Alexander Lukashenko paid an official visit to Ukraine and was received by President Poroshenko. Lukashenko is an ally of Moscow and planned joint Russian-Belarusian military exercises on Ukraine's northern border have given rise to concern. He remains a relatively isolated international figure because of Belarus's human rights and democracy record. The Belarusian leader has nevertheless sought to steer something of an autonomous line as regards Russia's aggression against Ukraine and improving relations with the European Union. And Minsk also hosts the ongoing tripartite consultations on finding a peaceful settlement for the conflict in the Donbas. And as for the war itself, over the last week, the fighting between the Ukrainian army and the pro-Russian forces intensified and resulted in the largest casualties for a long time suffered by Ukrainian forces, especially during a 24-hour period. According to the press service of the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense, anti-Ukrainian forces used heavy weapons, including mortars and tanks. On the 16th of July, pro-Russian forces reportedly shelled the residential sectors of Zolote a settlement near the town of Popasna in Luhansk Oblast. No casualties among civilians were registered there. On the 18th of June, pro-Russian forces shelled the residential area of the town of Avdiivka, Donetsk region, and two civilians were wounded. But 8 Ukrainian military were killed and 1 taken prisoner between the 19th and 20th of July. Overall, during the last week, 13 Ukrainian servicemen were killed in action, 16 wounded and 1 taken captive. The United States condemned the upsurge in the violence in eastern Ukraine, calling it the deadliest 24-hour period so far this year. It called for international monitors to have, quote, full, safe and unfettered, unquote, access to the conflict zone.
You said the Russian-led separatists in
yes.
Ukraine. So does that imply that, you know, there are Russian military advisors who are actually leading these forces in particular?
Like, it does. It does. We've talked about this, and I underscored this a few weeks back, that we believe that they are so-called separatists. They're not genuine separatists who are out there fighting on their own regard and their own behalf. These are Russian-led and Russian-backed.
And now for the feature interview. Marta Dychuk will speak to Bank of America Merrill Lynch's chief economist on the CIS, Vladimir Osakovsky, about Ukraine's economy.
Hello, I'm Marta Dychuk, and you're listening to Hromadske Radio. Today in our program Ukraine Calling, we're going to focus on the economy. We're very lucky to have with us Vladimir Osakovsky, who's the chief economist for Russia and CIS at the Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Mr. Osakovsky graduated from Georgetown University. He worked as a leading expert at the Institute for the Open Economy in the government of Sakha Republic, and as the chief economist and head of the macroeconomic analysis and research at UniCredit Bank. Mr. Osakovsky, thank you very much for finding the time to speak to us.
Always my pleasure.
Since 2011, you've been covering the Ukrainian economy. You come to Ukraine pretty often to meet with Ukraine's government and business representatives and participate in various financial forums. So you have a perspective on Ukraine's economy that our listeners will be very interested to hear. Let me start with a general question. In 2014, when Viktor Yanukovych fled Ukraine, the economy, from all reports, was in pretty terrible shape. Here we are in July of 2017. In your opinion, has Ukraine's economy turned the corner?
Well, if we are talking about the formal real GDP dynamics and things like that, then of course, yes, the economy seems to have reached the bottom, let's say, in the beginning of last year. Excuse me. And since then, the economy is actually quite a persistent real GDP recovery. And from that perspective, yes, of course, the turn has been turned, and the economy should probably be growing. There were quite a fundamental changes in the structure of the economy, quite a significant, artificial disbalances which were created over the past, 5 to 7 years. Were removed. It was a very painful process, but they were removed, and it's probably the time to reap the benefits of all these painful reforms which Ukraine has gone through.
Investment. This is a topic that is often talked about in regards to the economy. How would you evaluate the investment climate in Ukraine today? Over the past years, has this changed? In what ways? And what are some of the attractive sectors for foreign investors in Ukraine?
Well, speaking of the investment climate, I would say that the main achievement, over the past 2 years, that the Ukrainian government has removed those artificial disbalances which were created previously.
Sorry to interrupt. Can you explain what that means? Some of our listeners are not economists.
Yeah. So, for example, the gas prices or energy prices in general were kept artificially low. That was probably beneficial for some sectors of the economy, but for the economy in general, it was extremely costly. So that was removed. Yes, it was a painful process for some sectors of the economy, but as of, over the past 1 or 2 years, all of those are put on the market basis and a market footing and have hit the bottom, and the whole thing has turned the corner and started to grow. Another thing is that the whole economy had quite artificially high exchange rate back until, 2014. which was probably beneficial for some of the sectors. It was perceived as very beneficial for a lot of people, for a general population in general. But for the economy in general, it was extremely, extremely costly thing. And again, that has been removed already. The hryvnia right now is pretty much market-based currency. It has weakened massively, but again, it is now market-based, and as economy has started to grow, there is no reason to expect any additional massive weakness from now on, and we actually could see some reasons for currency to appreciate. And that, again, puts the whole economy on a very sound economic footing. So any growth which goes forward will probably be genuinely market-based. It might not be strong, massively strong, but it will be quite healthy.
So does the hryvnia need strengthening, and does the IMF have a role to play in this?
Well, speaking of the exchange rate in general, I would say that the key condition, let's say key target for all policymakers should probably be not the exchange rate, but rather the inflation. So there are plenty of examples where inflation was kept artificially low, let's say, well, it was kept low, or maybe artificially, but by artificially strengthening the currency. And Ukraine gives a pretty good example of that. In 2013, inflation was non-existent. Actually, the economy was in deflation. And the main reason for that the exchange rate was kept artificially strong. But that is not sustainable because, again, that was extremely costly for the whole economy, and that had to be corrected, which eventually was forced to do, and the National Bank was forced to do this correction in a very painful way. So I guess the key condition for the general long-term stability of the currency is the genuine monetary-driven stabilization of inflation, and which, with the stable prices in the long term, stable money supply domestic, there will be no reasons for the currency to fluctuate massively, let's say. And there are plenty of examples of this kind of positive transmission from the stabilization of inflation to the currency all around. The best example probably would be neighboring Russia, actually, where there was quite a huge devaluation of the currency. But the central bank has focused almost entirely on inflation, and it has achieved low inflation target already, and it is starting to benefit the ruble as well. I do think that the National Bank of Ukraine is pretty much on the same kind of track.
So how does this affect investment, if it does? Because that seems to be...
General, mm-hmm. Yeah, so with the market-based exchange rate, with the market-based, let's say, pricing in general economy, with no major disbalances, it all gives the investment a very predictable, let's say, environment. I mean, it's not predictable per se, but the level of predictability of this environment is pretty much the same as all over the world.
Does that make Ukraine an attractive place to invest?
Well, that gives a positive macroeconomic framework to invest for investment. On top of that, we will also need a regulatory framework, I'd say, a legal framework. If that would be comparable to other countries, then of course, yes, because the cost, I mean, the general costs of production, costs of, economic activity in Ukraine is by several times lower than, for example, in neighboring Poland and the other European countries and in Russia, for example. So why not? I mean, if those issues will be addressed with the stable, predictable, robust macroeconomic framework, then why not? But again, that regulatory framework is still yet to be corrected, of course.
So that's still a work in progress. Recently, there have been a number of agreements have been signed, the EU-Ukraine Association Agreement, the Canada-Ukraine Free Trade Agreement. Are these agreements likely to have an impact on Ukraine's economy stabilization?
Well, specifically, this Ukraine-European Union Association Agreement is actually a deep, comprehensive free trade agreement, right? Is the most important one because it exactly aims, at least, to address that regulatory framework, harmonize it with the European Union standards and all. So the goal of this agreement is actually to bring that regulatory framework in line with European standards, and if this goal will be achieved one way or another, then of course yes, and then we would automatically, let's say not automatically of course, but that we would in this case we would address that issue in terms of the economic development, the regulatory part. stable macro framework, if you fix the regulatory part, then things should be quite positive. And again, this association agreement does specifically that.
You've been watching Ukraine from a very close perspective, its economy. Can I get you to look forward? What are the greatest challenges and opportunities, and where do you see Ukraine's economy in, let's say, 5 years from now? If I can get you to speculate. You're an economist, so I know you might not want to, but let me push you on that.
Sure. And speaking of opportunities, if you just compare the level of development of your Ukrainian economy, it'll just be a pure GDP per capita in Ukraine and in the neighboring countries like Poland, Slovakia, Hungary, even Russia, you know, or even Belarus, you know, you see that it is actually much, much lower. And there are no fundamental, you know, like inherent reasons for why this should be the case. So it shouldn't be the case. And that gives you a huge opportunity because provided the, let's say, normalization of business condition in Ukraine to the relative to other countries, then the Ukrainian economy could double or triple in size, and it could still have this catch-up momentum to catch up with the Eastern members of the European Union. And that's a huge opportunity, of course, because there is plenty of room to go.
Sorry to interrupt. How does one grow the economy? How does one stimulate the economy? What's needed to make it grow?
Again, as I guess we discussed this, we pretty much have more or less okay macroeconomic framework, right? The market-based exchange rate, no major disbalances in the economy. So the macro framework is okay. If you fix the regulatory framework as well, as we also discussed, then why, from the business perspectives, why should business in Ukraine should be much cheaper than in the neighboring Poland, for example? So from that perspective, if the business conditions in Ukraine will be harmonized or equalized to the rest of the European Union, for example, then it creates huge opportunity for the Ukraine, because the economy will have, according to at least economic theory, will have to massively catch up with the European Union, at least with the eastern neighbors of it.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is it up to Ukrainian businessmen, or is it a combination of Ukrainian and foreign investors to make this growth happen? Because absolutely, the framework, it's getting there, parts of it are already there, but who's actually going to be the engine of the economy here?
Well, what's up for Ukrainian and foreign businesses is actually, I mean, their function is to do business, basically, to make money, explore the opportunities and, do all that stuff. Basically, if there is an opportunity, just go ahead and do it. Who creates those opportunities, is the Ukrainian authorities, the government and the Rada and to some extent, a national bank and all. So, yes, there are plenty of opportunities, not only in Ukraine, but in many other countries. But if there are regulatory risk, corruption risk, and many other sorts of political risk in Ukraine, then, of course, the business could just, you know, pass on that opportunity just to explore them in a different place. But again, if you equalize those risks from in Ukraine to the rest of the world, or at least with the neighbors, then these opportunities will be just, you know, attractive enough for businesses to do them, to explore them.
And what are the attractive sectors in Ukraine's economy for foreign investors? Are there any areas that are particularly strong or looking optimistic?
Well, in general, given that the Ukrainian economy has gone through quite a significant stress over the past few years, the whole economy actually is pretty full of quite so-called distressed assets, right? So there are plenty of companies, businesses, and all which came under massive pressure and extremely cheap and things like that. So there are plenty of those across pretty much all sectors. But again, from the fundamental GDP recovery perspective, I would say that the sectors who suffered the most will probably see the biggest upside potential. In that sense, I would say something like retail sector has suffered a lot. Maybe some construction items, the economy is driven. I mean, there is quite a significant pickup in investment, surprisingly. So those sectors probably, the banking sector is one big distressed asset, unfortunately. And if you bring this expertise to Ukraine, then you can get some, you know, good assets. I mean, not good, but, you know, very cheap assets.
Mr. Osikowski, what are some of the challenges that Ukraine's economy is facing today and over the next few years?
So I'd say that the main challenge to the policymakers and the economy in general is actually some kind of complacency, right? Because in order to do this catch up, which we have been discussed with the neighbors and with other countries, economy has to grow much, much faster than average and much, much faster than it is growing now. So it does require quite a huge work to be done to fix that regulatory framework. It's not an ordinary task. It's very difficult. It could face serious opposition. And that's what IMF continues to show in all of their reviews. So, but again, if economy will start to grow, as it is actually growing now already, so there could be some complacency on behalf of the policymakers just to relax and enjoy the recovery. Fundamentally, yes, the economy will be growing one way or another, but this growth might not be sufficient, and the Ukrainian economy could stick to that, you know, let's say poverty trap or something like that, which it is possibly right now.
Poverty trap, can you explain?
Well, it's not a poverty trap per se, but basically, it's Ukraine economy is very, let's say, it's very small relative to others, and there are reasons for that. And of course, the main reason is this regulatory framework, which is much, let's say, weaker, and much more risky for businesses than for and neighbors. And if it stays, then you know, there will be. So the relative gap between Ukrainian economy and its neighbors could easily stay.
Could expand or just stay as it is?
Could stay as it is, could expand. It has expanded over the past, let's say, 10, 15 years, if you look at the history. Yeah, so it's possible also, unfortunately. There are good examples in the neighborhood where this gap is actually closing. There are bad examples where it's widening. For example, like countries like Georgia did a pretty good job in terms of the narrowing the gap. The country did massive reforms, did address this corruption, did address the regulatory framework, brought the very robust macro framework as well, and is enjoying quite a robust growth despite all the headwinds.
Corruption, the word that's always in the news here. You just mentioned corruption as a problem. Do you see, from your perspective, is there an attempt to really tackle corruption, or is this just sort of words that you're seeing?
Well, I see very mixed messages. On one hand, yes, there are people who say that there are very positive changes on the ground. I also hear others who say that the situation is actually getting worse. So I do want to believe in second part. It's actually in the first part that there is some work being done. But this mixed message does suggest that there is still plenty of work to do. That's the general outcome, which very few would doubt, unfortunately.
So looking forward, it's positive, negative, cautiously optimistic. Looking forward?
Yeah, if you look economic fundamentals, then there are reasons to be at least tentatively positive. Economy will be growing, at least due to simple base effect after this huge recession which economy had. Economy will be growing, and that's, of course, positive. But again, just do not. It's just one big task is just not to fall in the complacency trap, and just relax and enjoy the ride, because there is much more work to be done. Because the growth have to be much stronger for much longer in order to do this catch up, which we discussed.
Thank you very much for that insight. We've been speaking with Mr. Vladimir Osikowski, the chief economist for Russia and CIS at the Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And now the cultural section. In recent years, summer festivals in Ukraine have really developed. As Odessa International Film Festival came to a close, this week saw a number of music festivals opening. The city of Dnipro hosted an island jazz festival. Ternopil hosted Fine Misto, a festival of rock, jazz, reggae, and poetry. And another rock festival took place in the picturesque town of Zalishtyke. And Lviv was home to two classical music festivals at the same time. an international festival of chamber music and organ music, and a national gathering of cymbaliste, or zither players. Meanwhile, Kyiv was enjoying a week of open-air jazz and poetry on the roof. In other words, a wide variety of music was there to choose from in numerous locations across Ukraine. And for music now. Well, it's summer. We all want to relax. But in parts of eastern Ukraine, people can't, because war continues to fall on their heads. A band called Incomer from Lviv in the west of the country, far from the war, recently recorded this song. It's called Spectre. The line that sticks in my mind after hearing this is, they have guns.
Undefined specter, we need your response. They have guns, they have guns. Every day we pray, better in your heart, in your light.
And looking forward, next week we'll have a new feature for you, an expert panel discussion focusing on the main events of the month, and as always, the latest news. Tune in for a new episode or write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskyradio.org. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.